So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Hulk Hogan came down to check out our show, and everything just fell to pieces. At the end, it was total chaos, mayhem.
Oh, what is he doing? I know. I didn't mean to do it, man.
Blitz is laying around like he's dead. I got an ambulance coming in. I didn't know what to do. Hang in there, brother. Hang in there.
Not cool. Now both of us are in the middle of this crap, so our reputations are on the line. Now we got to clean this situation up. Let's round him up. We got to talk to him.
All right.
So I wake up. I'm in an ambulance. I'm strapped to a gurney. I got a serious headache. I'm completely pissed off. First thought that runs through my mind is, I'm not going out this way. I'm going back to the bar.
Don't go, let's start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't go, let's start. I've got a weak heart.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock. Joined by Wei Ting. How are you doing today, Wei?
Doing okay. It's Mondays. Wednesday. And I'm still getting used to it. Wednesday somehow feels a lot like Monday.
I know. It's your whole week has kind of shifted.
Yeah. How was it? Yeah, it's so weird now.
I wanted to ask you, because 5 days ago, you went to a wedding to shoot it. And I wanted to ask you what this was like.
It was good. I didn't know you wanted to talk about it.
I just wanted to know.
Especially on air where, perhaps people... never mind.
You're too concerned.
Okay.
All right. So wedding was good.
How was your Saturday? What did you do?
On Saturday, I went to Brampton for Tiger Fest.
Oh, how was that? No? You're shaking your head no.
It was... We got there, and I've been told by the event coordinators that there were 8,000 people there.
First of all, what is Tiger Fest?
Tiger Fest is this... it's put on by the Tiger Jeet Singh Foundation. Tiger Jeet Singh, his son, Tiger Ali Singh, former WWE performer. And it was pretty much this... there was a concert going on. There was like a high school challenge. It was a whole day event, and it would feature wrestling as well to cap off the event.
For people who aren't aware, Tiger Jeet Singh is like a pretty well known, at least in a suburb of Toronto called Milton. He's like a local celebrity there, and not only that, but he has a high elementary school named after him. He's done a lot of charity work. His whole family has been very involved in the city of Milton, and every year. Yes, like John said, they put on this festival to raise money.
Yes. So we got there, and the turnout was impressive. Like, this was a free event, so tons of people showed up, definitely in the thousands. I don't think 8,000. I think that's a little exaggerated. But if you were to tell me there were like 3,500, 4,000, I'd believe that. I'm not very good at reading crowds, but this was one of the biggest independent shows I have ever been to. I'm sure for a lot of these Toronto-based wrestlers, maybe the biggest crowd they've ever performed in front of. So it was an outdoor event, so visually looked fantastic. The problem was it was outdoors, and it was such a big event that they had all these security guards around. It took us a half hour to get inside, and thankfully their media person, Navit, is a listener of ours.
Oh.
And he's a big fan of ours. He got me in. He's like, hey, man, Super Clash was awesome. So we were talking about Super Clash 3. Mm-hmm. So very cool guy. But I had trouble finding this guy later on in the day because the wrestlers were all in this one section, and security would not let us talk to the wrestlers, so I couldn't do any interviews. Now, I had to wait till the end of the show. The sun has gone down, and Wei, you would know our situation, no sun gun.
Oh, no.
So the interviews just did not, like, guys were not available. Then they had this autograph session after the show while it was already dark. So we did two interviews. I got licked by Bushwhacker Luke again.
Oh.
And then I interviewed Tyson, who was great, but it was like the sun was coming down. And I just hope this piece turns out okay, because I guess I should have done the interviews the second I got there, but I wanted to talk to them after the event, after they had been out performing. I don't like interviewing guys before they go out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, that's really too bad. We
need another sun gun at this place.
And believe me, I put in that request many a time.
Would that have significantly helped, even if you're outside, like in the dark? Would that have helped that much?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it would have. Well, that's shitty to hear. I'm sorry about that.
It was a tough shoot. It was so big. There were so many people around, and this one security guard was just not letting us go anywhere. It was just full of just security, and you know, everyone is running something, and it was just way more hectic than your typical independent wrestling show should be.
Did you get tested afterwards?
Did I get tested?
Yeah.
What even tested?
Bushwhacker Luke licking you on the face.
Oh, that was just, it was disgusting.
When was the first time that happened?
Oh, he did it at that show we went to, the Gian and Paige, the Megan Boys show.
Okay, the one with, like, DiBiase. He licked you.
Yeah.
Ew.
It was really disgusting. I had Purell that I put all...
On your face?
Yeah.
All right.
It was really disgusting.
What's that thing? It's like a little spot, like a growth on your face.
Growth? I think I have a zit.
Are you sure? You sure that's all that is?
What a dick. Not a dick. So that was my weekend.
Well,
you went to a wedding.
Yeah, much more exciting than what I did. I went to a wedding. I shot it.
Whose wedding was it?
These people that I don't know. They hired me to shoot it.
Did you get to... get food?
Yeah, they gave me food.
Oh,
that's good. They fed me. I even had seconds. And they put me in the table where all the other people who they didn't really know sat. So, like, I was sitting next to one of the boyfriends of the bridesmaid and two other people that just... I don't know why. I don't know why. They weren't there for any particular reason. Like... You know, they weren't close to the bride or groom, and I didn't really try to bother making conversation at all. I did, but it went very awkwardly. So
that'd be terrible, just being there by yourself and you don't know anybody.
Yeah, so at least, you know, I had a job to do, so I would just I didn't sit too long. I just sat and ate.
And then you came home on Saturday and you watched Ring of Honor.
That's right.
Now, how did you watch Ring of Honor?
I caught it actually in Toronto. We have two options. We can either catch it on Sunday nights at 11 p.m. but I'm busy at that time, as are you, I'm aware. So instead I caught it on Saturday at 9 o'clock.
That's where I PVR'd it.
Yeah,
I watched it
off of day. WNYO.
Yes, 167 on Rogers, I believe.
So I PVR'd it actually, and I actually watched it on Sunday night.
All right. Well, let's chat about Ring of Honor first. This is our double feature, and then we'll build up to the midgets. So the show started off. They taped this back in August in Chicago Ridge, Illinois, Frontier Fieldhouse, and Kevin Kelly kicks off the show. Now, I watched this, and I made the mistake of not changing the aspect ratio on my TV to stretch it out. So I saw like a squished screen.
You saw a very thin Kevin Kelly.
Yes. It was everything was squished in, which...
Yeah, it's anamorphic. The show is shot in 16:9. But for some reason, WNYO, when they were showing this, it wasn't being letterboxed. They just showed it anamorphic. They showed everything squished. Everything super thin. I've never really seen that done on broadcast TV before.
No, I
maybe
seen
on
that
like
either.
A cheap digital channel, I've seen it. But broadcast TV, they would.
Let's be honest. WNYO is. It's an affiliate of MyTV.
It used to be UPN.
It's a local affiliate, though, way. Like it's.
I know. I'm not saying it's supposed to be high budget, but if you're representing a network, I would expect, you know, I wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't expect to see a show in an aspect ratio that it's not supposed to be presented in. So I don't know if that was a problem with the affiliate. I'd like to know what other people saw. I'd like to know if WUTV showed it differently. And I also would like to know if anybody got to watch the show in HD. Because as far as I'm aware...
I don't think it's available in HD, is it?
I don't know. I mean, they shot in 16:9, so I would imagine for future purposes, they must have shot in HD.
And that's something I didn't really even connect the dots on, is just that after watching ROH for 2 years on HDNet, mm-hmm. making the transition from HD to SD, mm-hmm. it was a big jump for me. And I'm not like an HD snob, but once you've seen a product in HD, going back to standard, that's a very awkward transition to get over.
That's true. It's very true. And that's one of the things that is definitely noticeable from the onset with this new incarnation of ROH, is that the production values are lesser than what they used to be on HDNet.
In some regards. In mm-hmm. others, I thought they were better.
I
thought the sound was much better.
Yes, I agree with you.
The commentary is done in the arena as opposed to in post, and I think that makes a big difference.
By production value, I don't really mean the concepts. I think the concepts are improved. Like you mentioned, the live atmosphere comes across a lot better. The crowd seems a lot bigger, and the commentary is an improvement as well. But I just mean, you know, the lower quality of cameras, the lower quality of actual sound. I mean, not you know, how live something sounds, but I'm just talking about, like, this sounded like a mono, you know, mm-hmm. very muffled type of signal. So that is a step down from
I thought the graphics package was an improvement. Fine. I thought those looked good for the title match. You saw that.
Mm-hmm.
They've included a lot of they've clearly gotten a lot of ad time as well within the hour, which they've used to promote the website. They didn't really push any upcoming live events, but for future shows, it's good to know that they'll kind of have that. They had that one segment. Well, we'll get it. We'll get into all of that stuff. But definitely. Of a different feel than the HDNet show. So Kevin Kelly's in the ring, and he announces that tonight's main event will be for the tag titles, with wrestling's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, taking on Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. And then they introduce his new color commentator, Nigel McGuinness, who comes out, says it's bloody lovely to be back in ROH, and that ROH made Nigel McGuinness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A huge reaction for Nigel, but they don't really explain who Nigel is, and I guess it's something you kind of notice from watching this show, is that they don't really there's not too much pandering to the new audiences. Actually, there is, but like not as much as you would expect for maybe a series premiere of other types. I think for this show, there is a lot of expectation that the people tuning into this first show will have already seen ROH once before and will at least know some of these people.
We then see a feature on the Bravado Brothers and Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, who are discussing their climb up the tag ranks, and that leads into our first match on the Sinclair Broadcast Group, Future Shock and the Bravado Brothers. And they do a tail of the tape for all of their matches now, where they show, you know, height, weight, mm-hmm. age, and the bottom one says Code of Honor. And
yes.
Both said yes. they subscribe to the Code of Honor.
You can sense that they're going for a much more old-school type of presentation with professional wrestling, and also like a very more sport and athletic-based presentation. No, there are no backstage vignettes where wrestlers meet, you know, in the locker room or the bathroom, and they talk about their matches. They don't do any of that. Instead, they have...
I'm fine with that.
Instead, they have sit-down interviews, much in the style of a UFC, right before a match. So, they're treating this like a real sporting event, and this tale of the tape is you know, another
example. Look at the problems when we talk about TNA, when they do backstage vignettes, where they look so low rent, where they're in a trailer.
Yeah, but I like that about TNA.
Well,
we disagree.
Okay, we disagree on that. My point is that I think wrestling fans have a certain like WWE make their backstage segments look professionally shot.
Yeah, but it's too perfect. Like they make it look not real. They light up the ceiling for no reason. What room will you walk
but
into?
But there's a consistency with every backstage segment in that's how a WWE backstage segment looks.
I'm just saying,
and I don't have any problem accepting that.
But the consistency with the TNA vignettes is that they look real.
Well, I'm gonna say if Ring of Honor were to do backstage segments, I think they'd look terrible.
Sure. I agree. I mean,
like, we've been in the back of the Frontier Fieldhouse, which is actually, they could do it in that big gym they have that we saw in the Wrestling Road Diaries. Mm-hmm. But, I mean,
I agree with you. If you don't have the the means to shoot it nicely, then I think it's better to go with
do your pre-tapes, like where you can put video packages together to get that stuff across. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ring of Honor had to have just been ecstatic if they watched Impact Wrestling on Thursday night, seeing their new feature where they featured fans' tweets. Because on this show, they introduced the Tweet of the Week.
Yes.
How did this happen, Wei? How did Impact all of a sudden just get this Tweet of the Week idea and be able to put it on 48 hours before ROH's debut? And they inserted that tweet in post, I think, because the announcers never called attention to that tweet.
Oh, yeah, you could be right. I don't know.
Something fishy going on there.
Could be an odd coincidence, or it could be something more.
Christopher Daniels there. Double agent.
Oh, wow.
So, the Tweet of the Week was that people should watch ROH because it isn't 1997.
Mm-hmm.
So, shot number one fired.
Yeah.
Adam Cole is getting double-teamed by the Bravados. Cole starts to fight back. He hits a series of elbows and forearms and then rolls into his corner to make the tag to O'Reilly. O'Reilly hits a double dragon screw leg whip as one of the Bravados gets thrown into his partner and then gets thrown by O'Reilly. We see a series of butterfly suplexes by Riley into a suplex by Cole and then a suicide dive by Cole to the floor. O'Reilly then hits a running dropkick off of the apron onto Harlem. And then Harlem is on the shoulders of O'Reilly, takes a super kick from Adam Cole, and then they hit their Ride the Lightning move, which is, for ECW fans, the total elimination spot from Perry Saturn and John Cronus. And Cole
with
and O'Reilly...
with a clothesline instead of a kick.
Yes. And get the win, 7 minutes, 24 seconds, and then they shake hands after the match, obeying the code of honor.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a fine match.
I thought this was a really good opener.
I enjoy the Bravado Brothers a lot. I think they have a great gimmick. Future Shock, every time I see Kyle O'Reilly, that guy screams heel to me.
Really?
Yeah, he just has the look of a heel. He's the short-haired one.
Well, the Future Shock I was really impressed with in this match, and they totally won me over with their moveset. Just a great tag team maneuvers, and as for the commentary, I thought Kevin Kelly did a great job, but you would notice throughout the show that Nigel was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
And you know, he's probably still trying to get very comfortable in the role. I don't know how much commentary he's done in the past.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure he's done some odd commentary for ROH in the past, but very sporadic and few and far between.
But yeah, a huge improvement from, you know, what it was like on HDNet or like any of the DVDs. The commentary is now ringside, and you
know, Mike Hogwood.
No, and that was a huge improvement as well. I think of all the commentators that ROH has had, I think Kevin Kelly was really the best choice.
Kevin Kelly's excellent. He's my favorite play-by-play person in wrestling right now.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think anyone touches him at this point.
Yeah, he's
Jim Ross isn't allowed to. And I mean, our options are Michael Cole and Mike Tenay. Yeah, I really was the thing I took away from Death Before Dishonor, of just Kelly and Prazak are a great team together, and I'm hoping that Nigel can fit into the color role.
Yeah, I think the background noise, like the appeal of doing the commentary live, is that you have the reactions of your commentators seem a lot more excited and natural, and also their tone is going to be much more believable because they have to speak above the crowd, so they have to speak louder. Whereas when you're recording in a booth, you can talk like this and just paste it over ambience afterwards, and you can really notice the difference.
Yep.
I was going to say, you know, talking about the production values, for this very first match, you do notice that the hard camera is slightly off angle, like it's positioned slightly right, and I've just found that a little distracting off the start. This was later corrected for the main event.
We see a promo with Kevin Kelly plugging the website, and then the screen, it just shifts to fit Davey Richards into the shot.
Mm-hmm.
That was an awkward transition. And Davey Richards came in, cut the his babyface promo, and that was about it.
Yeah. These were like almost like, you know, bumpers, and I think they're good. I think they're, I like this style of presentation. I like them going for a more old school feel. I like that all you have is just a backdrop and then the interview and then the wrestler out there cutting a promo. I would like to see these to be, like, I would hope that in the future these would be even longer. So we get to see these like a Davey Richards cut a longer promo. Like, I mean, like Mean Gene used to do with any of the wrestlers in the WWE back in the 80s. Let these guys demonstrate their personalities in an extended promo. And
it'd be great for these guys to have regular promo time.
Yeah, yeah.
Just get comfortable.
And I have to say, I don't like the background music that they put behind this stuff at all. Like, throughout this entire show, there's just so much generic rock music throughout the whole thing. And, like, when you're watching a sporting event, somebody was interviewing a hockey player backstage, you don't hear, you know, music underneath it. It just makes it sound like it's a commercial, and makes it sound kind of, like, cheap, in my opinion. So I would just like to see these without background guitar riffs.
They did a segment with Kevin Kelly on the streets of Manhattan recapping the Best in the World show from this past June. Yeah, this was a little strange. I understood the focus of this. It was they basically recapped the top two matches from Best in the World, with Davey Richards winning the title from Eddie Edwards, and kind of explaining who your ROH champion is, who he beat, and it was a great match and a fantastic post-match celebration. I thought that was good. I had no problem with recapping, you know, a, you know, 2-month-old or 3-month-old event. But it's like they were going through the crowd, like, on the streets, asking people who they thought would win the match that we've already recapped and happened 3 months ago. It just seemed odd.
It was part of they asked the fans before they showed you the highlights, right? So it was just sort of setting the scene I took those to mean.
All right. Well, they had some fans as well talking about Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're building up to a rematch with Richards and Edwards. So that was bringing people up to speed on where this feud began.
These highlight packs, I think, are really important for this program, because, you know, in terms of editing and special effects, you're not going to expect anything near the level of the highlight packs of a WWE, for instance. But the advantage that Ring of Honor has is that the wrestling is amazing. Their moves are amazing. So when you chop them all together, it looks like something that, like, you know, you show a non-fan and they see all these cool moves, and it's like what you know, Teddy Hart said, you know, you just show them all these cool moves. It's like the X Games, you know, like you have to sit down and watch it. So I think that's what the advantage that ROH has. The story pack, the highlight pack tells the story well, and Davey Richards will defend the title in 2 weeks, is the message.
They do a feature on the Code of Honor with Jim Cornette describing the spirit of the locker room and the importance of shaking hands after a match. And then he went on to talk about new ideas for the show, including the use of animals and space boots and turnbuckles used that would be robotic.
What is Cornette's role right now?
Executive producer is his title.
Executive producer. Okay.
He's kind of
in storyline and real life.
Yes.
Okay.
So, well, he's not the owner of the company. He's not running it in that sense. But I mean, the television product is pretty much his.
But he's
produce it
on air. He's got like the commissioner role, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to. I mean, if it doesn't work out, I think they should stay with Nigel and you know, see where he goes. But if it doesn't work out with Nigel, I would really like to see Cornette in that role as a
Cornette's been great whenever they have used him on commentary in Ring of Honor on a few occasions. He's fantastic in that role. Then they do a special on Jay Lethal returning to Ring of Honor, saying that I'm coming back to ROH at the age of 26 as a man, and I'm not going to be somebody else, alluding to his run in TNA, where he played somebody else. Literally.
Yeah.
So there you go. And McGinnis is then going around asking the fans about who will win the main event tonight. And the one fan says, Haas and Benjamin. And that takes us to our main event with Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team against Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, who come out with Shane Hagedorn and Sara Del Rey with the tag titles on the line. McGinnis had a good line here saying, in the rules of poker, only one thing can beat two kings, and that's two aces, and they're about to come to the ring.
Hmm.
Very good.
Nice.
It's a good line.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
So it starts off slow between both teams. Benjamin gets the hot tag and hits a springboard clothesline to Castagnoli. Benjamin goes to the floor. He's held down by Claudio, and then Hero slides and kicks Benjamin in the face through the ropes. They did a weird throw. They threw it a break, and they're like, we will be back in 2 minutes. And they were back in 2 minutes. So very short breaks here.
Yeah, yeah.
It was good. It didn't really hurt the flow of the match, I found. From there, the Kings of Wrestling get the heat on Benjamin, who, after he jumps into the steel post, takes a European uppercut from Claudio. Benjamin then pulls the ropes down, which sends Hero to the floor. But then as Benjamin's going for the hot tag to Haas, Haas gets pulled off the apron by Hero, who's on the outside. Benjamin counters a vertical suplex attempt by the Kings of Wrestling, hits a neck breaker to both, and then finally makes the tag to Haas. Haas looked really good here. He came in, hit a tilt-a-whirl head scissors to Claudio, then a T-bone suplex for a two count, and then even a Hurricane Rana and a follow-up Mafia kick. Then Hero comes in. He goes for the KTFO, only gets a two count, but very little reaction for, you know, kicking out of Hero's finish here. Hero then hits a discus elbow. Claudio comes in with his helicopter swing, with Hero hitting a sit-out drop kick. Benjamin then comes in, breaks up the count, and Benjamin stops the Kings of Wrestling from hitting the KRS-One. And then we see the leap of faith by Benjamin to the back of Claudio, where he basically does the spring off of Haas's shoulders onto Claudio's back. And then they hit wrestling's greatest finisher, which is pretty much a spine buster setup and then a jumping clothesline by Benjamin, and they pin Chris Hero. Almost 15 minutes this match went, and a pretty solid tag match.
Yeah, I thought so too. I don't think it's comparable to, you know, maybe their pay-per-view offerings, but because you simply don't have the time, you don't really have the build either. You know, this was merely more of a showcase match to get people to.
And I think this was the show. This was the end of the Kings of Wrestling, so I don't believe they have another television appearance.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong, but okay. I think that's it for them.
But yeah, no, a very good match, especially for free TV. Come on.
And then they wrap up the show, and they plug next week El Generico against Jay Lethal for the television title. And they did the video package with Lethal talking about becoming TV champion, so built that up pretty well. And that was episode one of Ring of Honor. So overall, I thought it was a good show. I think definitely a lot of room for improvement.
Absolutely.
I give it a 6 out of 10.
I give this show a 6.5 out of 10. It's going to be expected that the production values are nowhere near, where the WWEs are going to be. They simply don't have any of the budget or any of the people involved, and that's to be expected. But what you do learn from this first episode, at least even with those two matches, and definitely with the highlight packs, is that the wrestling is at a whole nother level than what the WWE and TNA are offering right now.
That's their strength.
Absolutely.
And there's a huge audience for that.
Yep.
And you mix it in where you have compelling storylines. I mean, that's always the knock that I don't understand why people label, like, ROH is just simply, oh, it's just workers, and there's no storylines attached to it. They've done some excellent storytelling over the last couple of years. I mean, Steen and Generico is a feud that's been going on for almost 2 years now. Like, there's still connection with those two characters at this point, 2 years later.
Yeah, totally.
Lots of storylines that you can tell within the context of building around a wrestling title. So
It's going to be a challenge, though, with this format, because, what are their taping schedules like? Do you know, John?
They taped 6 weeks worth back in August.
Okay.
So they're doing their next set of tapings on October the 1st, this coming weekend, actually, in Louisville.
So they do the 6 weeks. And then, like, how do their iPay-per-views coincide with the
They're going to work it, like, their next iPay-per-view isn't until December.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to build it around so that their tapings will lead into an iPay-per-view. I think that's how, so that you don't, I think they want to get away from any kind of pattern where you're taping TV that will air after your iPay-per-view.
Yeah, that would be wrong, because the whole point, I would think, is for people watching the show to buy the iPay-per-view. But does that mean that, will they continue to run house shows?
Yes, yeah.
And what are the storylines in the house shows going to follow?
Well, the house shows aren't so much storyline driven. I mean, you're not taping those. I mean, that's more the live event experience. It's
okay.
Much like, you know, that's what house shows are.
But, you know, as far as, like, babyface or heel turns go, what do you think they'll be doing?
I don't think
or
there's
going to
be... Like, what do you mean? Like,
I mean, let's
if a
say
guy turns heel at the tapings, and then they're not going to be taping that far out of when they're airing. I think they're going to have it down to like taping, and then that show airs like 3 weeks later. I don't think it's going to be a giant.
You said 6 weeks.
Worth, that's what they're at right now, but it's going to be changed. I think you'll have these October 1st tapings, and then they're probably going to tape again in November. Okay. I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue.
Cool. Okay. Well, in either case, my point was just that they're going to run into the same challenge as TNA in that every week you're only going to get so much airtime to give to each program. So this week, you know, we only saw Charlie Haas and the Kings of Wrestling and then Future Shock. Nothing else at all. Like, no introduction to any of the other people in ROH. I guess Davey Richards and they did a good job with that, but...
Yeah, I'm totally... If the alternative is TNA, where I'm given 12, 13 angles in 2 hours, mm-hmm. and I don't remember any of it, versus two...
Yeah.
Like, angles weren't even shot on this show. This is just introduction. I'd much rather spend an hour where I learned five mm-hmm. people versus 25 thrown at me, and I remember one, maybe.
That's very true. It is going to be a challenge to maintain an interest in these people throughout the weeks without putting them on TV every week. So
I think your key guys need to be focused on. Like, mm-hmm. I think...
your champion?
Yes. Like, a guy like Davey Richards should have a presence or at least be mentioned mm-hmm. each week. I mean, you should have an update. It's not to say you have to do an angle every week with your guys. I think that's... One of the big problems is just that I think fans are so burned out from angles that it's really hard for people to care about an angle. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many angles have you cared about in WWE in the last 3 years? It's like Nexus and Punk. It's really hard to think mm-hmm. of any big angles that mm-hmm. have really resulted in people being able to absolutely. Remember and care about them when so much is thrown at you on a weekly basis.
Totally, totally. I agree with that. You know, we talked a lot about the what benefits the production can benefit from for this episode, and I don't think it's too big of a hindrance. You know, like I said, the main appeal of the show is the wrestling, and as long as the wrestling's there, I think everything else can be secondary. You know, I do have to say, though, the show did feel a little overproduced at times. By that I mean in interviews, they've mentioned that, you know, with this new show, they want to try to convey the live atmosphere a little better. And I think they did a good job of that with the crowd, with the commentary. But I think to extend that, they need to think about doing that with the overall presentation of the show as well. And what I mean by that is, you know, little things like taking the music, the background music out of the segments, and everything just like... feels too polished, there's no breathing room like there would be for a live TV show. And when you watch sports, it has to feel live. For this show, it feels quite often like a taped syndicated TV show.
Yeah.
So
I'm definitely curious to see. You know, Jim Cornette has said in a few interviews that they really had some problems early on in the tapings where they couldn't connect with the announcers at ringside with their headsets, and they're having all these issues. And they say by show like 3 and 4 is when it really hits its stride. So I kind of want to see where they improve. And mm-hmm. even after the tapings this weekend, the modifications they'll make after these first set of tapings, I want to see where this goes from show one, because I think you could see a lot of good in show one, but you can see a lot of stuff they can improve upon and take away from that, take some constructive criticism from, you know, people like us that are watching this, and what can be expected. So I'm also curious how many people are going to watch this when it's online on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I got a decent amount of feedback from people, but it's a show that you have to find.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very unlikely you're going to just stumble upon this mm-hmm. show in the, you know, 160 level for, you know, my cable package. But I think the website airing, I'm hoping that a lot of fans go check it out on the website, because that could be a big benefit to them.
Yeah, the way I believe it works with ROH is that member, you can join. You can join like on ROHWrestling.com. They have a membership that you can join, and if you join this membership, you can get the show right on Monday.
Oh,
to watch it. But otherwise,
is it free?
I'm not sure. Actually, I'm really not sure. But you otherwise would have to wait until what is it?
Thursday
to watch it. So yeah, I'm looking at the listings of all the Sinclair broadcasters, and it's really like predominantly on the east side of the country. Like a whole half of the country is almost not covered. You have Texas though, and you have Oklahoma and Nevada, but almost the entire.
Well, they're missing like there's nothing in California.
Yeah.
The Pacific Northwest doesn't have an affiliate.
New York City doesn't have one. So, still, you know.
Are they in Chicago? They have TV in Chicago, I imagine. Right?
Let me take a look. Chicago, Illinois.
Because that's one of their big bases.
It's in Decatur, Springfield, and Peoria. I don't know.
I'm sure you
get,
if you're in Chicago, I'm sure you get the Peoria, if it's in Peoria.
Okay.
So there you go. That was episode one of Ring of Honor. And from there, we are going to transition over to another promotion that just debuted, Micro Championship Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
What compelled you to want to watch this?
The fact that it existed.
Mainly. It exists.
And I don't know. Well, it's been done before, but what I am really curious to know is why Hulk Hogan would attach his name to it.
I was asking myself that early on and frequently. Did you ever see Half Pint Brawlers on Spike TV?
I did not.
I did not either. But everyone has said it was significantly better than this.
Oh, yeah?
So I can only imagine. So let's give the premise here. This is all based in Tampa. Johnny G is the promoter of Micro Championship Wrestling, a group of midget wrestlers. And before anyone gets on our ass... they specifically state in this episode that they are midget wrestlers. They don't want to be called small people.
Little people.
Little people, whatever. I've never understood why people have a problem with the word midget.
Well,
we had this big debate at the Fight Network for an edition of Ultimate Classic Wrestling where we had a midget match. And I told them I am calling them midgets because that's what they are. I'm not going to call them minis. And I'm not calling them small people, little people.
Yeah, I'm not a midget, so I can't tell you what the offense would be if there was any.
Like that's the term. And if there's any midgets out there that take offense, I apologize. But that's what I'm going to refer to them throughout this program as. So Johnny G is like this ridiculous carnival huckster character.
Looks like a former wrestler.
Yes.
Normal
sized. No, this guy looked like a neon sign. And
he's
struggling. His league is struggling.
And he's been friends with Hulk Hogan for 20 years.
But he's never called a favor until now.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing how that all works. So his business partner is Demo, who is one of the midget wrestlers. They run this place, and we start off where they are holding a show in the backyard of a frat house, and they're putting on this show, and this is where we kind of get to meet some of the midgets with this promotion, such as Demo and Blix. Blix is like this asshole. He's like the CM Punk of this company.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy who's the good worker. He's the veteran, and he's very angry about having to work this show at a frat house with these drunk guys all surrounding the ring.
And this escalates to legit heat between Blix and Demo. So this is almost done like documentary style, but completely worked. Like,
yeah,
ridiculously silly.
Sure, absolutely. At this point, I didn't know what the show was. I didn't know if it was supposed to be, supposed to come across as a documentary or supposed to come across as like a fake show, but with a very inventive and realistic way of telling the stories. But, The workers pretty much all cut promos in their interviews, totally in character. Blix is talking about how he really hates Demo.
Yeah, they really don't like each other.
Yeah.
We also meet Meatball, who is the world's largest midget, and Justice, who is the son of the late Cowboy Lang, who Stampede Wrestling fans may remember.
Yeah. And the... Oh, okay, that's right. And these interviews, just like, they really came across as scripted. They came across like they took many takes to do, and they came across like they were pre-written, you know?
Blix gets upset during the show at these the frat guys spilling beer on the ring, and they're leaning into the ring, and Blix is old school. The outsiders, the marks, don't get to come in the ring. And he cuts his promo in the ring on Johnny G., and just leaves, and this leads to a fight between Demo and Blix in the trailer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So.
In a weird roundabout way, this was, the show would be bookended with Demo and Blix, and feud coming full circle.
Yeah, this was the build. This is the build. So they have a brawl in the RV.
So after this show has just completely fallen off the hinges, it's been a complete embarrassment. They need to get paid by the head of the frat house, who is Chris, who is played by Roderick Strong. And if ever there was a more believable looking frat house douchebag, it was Roderick Strong.
Absolutely. So yeah, for some reason they got Roderick Strong to play this frat.
This is what his character should be in ROH.
Sure.
Is like this frat house douchebag, because I don't know. There's something about Roderick Strong in ROH that doesn't click for me. It never connected as champion. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic worker. But there's just something I just don't see this guy. I don't know. Something doesn't connect. Yeah. But seeing him here, this was this guy in his natural skin. It really was.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I really know what you're saying. It's like...
He looks like a dick you would see on John Street on a Saturday night in Toronto.
Yeah. Like, he comes across as maybe somebody who when the cameras are on, he tries to, at least in ROH, pretend to be somebody that's not really who he is. Like, maybe, you know, a Davey Richards or something, some like a champion type of character. But, sure, he comes across as a cocky, arrogant person.
So... He tells Johnny G that you guys only gave us half a show, so we're going to be paying you half. And refers to Justice as and the midgets as little people. And this is where Justice gets upset, shows off his tattoo that says Midget Life, and then takes down Roderick Strong.
And
Jim Cornette probably picked up his TV and threw it across the room, seeing a midget take down his former world champion.
Mm-hmm. Took him down, and Roderick can't take the assault, so he decides to pay.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
So Johnny G calls in his favor and calls up Hulk Hogan in a panic, saying that, you know, we're not going to make it. And Hogan says to calm down, he's going to come check it out. And his advice is, hire more guys. That's his advice.
Yeah.
Spend more money.
Clearly, you could tell Hulk Hogan is barely involved in the production of this thing. He's just, they didn't even, he was just a voice and an interview recording session here.
Yep.
I don't know. Do we have to go through this whole stupid thing?
What do you want to, they held some auditions, they hired some new talent, Starla Love and Sarge, as well as, what was the guy's name? Huggy?
A pimp, yeah.
The pimp.
These are all midgets playing pimps and farmers and whatever.
And this is when we get to Hulk Hogan shows up along with Brian Knobbs, mm-hmm. introduced as a 17-time tag champion. And that's now pretty much the story is that Hulk Hogan has set up their biggest show ever in Orlando, and the investors are going to come to watch this mm-hmm. show. And if the investors like it, they'll go on tour. And the company will be set.
Yeah. So, that's the storyline. And like a typical you know, like, when I was watching this show, it reminded me a lot of, like, a show like Date My Mom, you know? It's, like, you know, you remember watching Date My Mom, right?
Yes.
And,
it was like
the interviews that they do on Date My Mom are
so fake.
Fake and so scripted, even though they try to present it like a reality show. But you can, I don't even think they really try to hide it either. Like the one-liners are like so obviously scripted, and that's how it comes across like this in this show as well. Everything seems super scripted, and everything moves so fast. Things happen like I was trying to look at the shots. They don't stay on a single shot for longer than 5 seconds in the whole show.
It's such quick cuts.
Like, everything is like 1-2 cut, 1-2 3 cut, 1 cut, 1-2 cut, and then the longest shot you could find is a 5 second shot. It no longer feels like reality. It feels like some type of hyper reality.
So they do this show with Hogan and Knobs at ringside, and the show is pretty flat. The crowd turns on some of the matches. The new wrestlers that they hired are all terrible. And Hogan just sat at ringside, and it led up to this one big spot where Knobs does a run-in, and as they went to commercial twice, like, they had so much confidence of people tuning out that as they went to commercial, they show one of the midgets being put into an ambulance as the voiceover says ominously, "Tragedy strikes." Like, teasing that a guy dies is how they went to break twice. Mm-hmm. And what it was Brian Knobs runs into the ring, throws Blix to the floor, and Blix does a stretcher job. And this leads to legit heat between Blix and Brian Knobs.
Yeah.
So the show was pretty much a failure, and it all was a setup for Hogan to give them a pep talk, breaking down the show and tell them that you have one show to impress the investors, and if this is what they see, you guys are going to be out of a job.
You can really tell that. I mean, the wrestling is part of what makes the framework of this show, but it's really not presented, like, it's not emphasized at all. They don't show full matches. They don't really show
matches. It's all highlight matches. Form.
It's really a documentary style where they show you everything outside of the ring. They build all those stories outside of the ring and then show you little snippets of what goes on inside the ring. So, that's the presentation.
The best line here was at the end of the show where, after Knobs had tossed this guy and sent him to the hospital, Hogan says, quote, "Now the two of us are in the middle of this and it can affect our reputation and we have to clean this up." It was probably the most honest comment in this entire episode. And Knobs then just says, "The show isn't looking too good." So we come back, and now Knobs takes all the midgets to wrestling school, and Knobs is going to train them how to work, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to Knobs, and Blix wouldn't participate because he's pissed at Knobs, and it leads to a big altercation where Knobs asks Blix, "Have you ever sold out Madison Square Garden? What about the LA Coliseum?" And Blix says, "No, I have not." And I was expecting Knobs to reply with the exact same answer, but it led to Blix leaving the training session. So we were building up to a match that would never happen between Blix and Brian Knobs. This was a roaring start to this series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They go to a bar to promote the next show. They all get drunk. Justice is caught peeing in an alleyway by a cop who was just a horrendous actor.
The cop puts him in handcuffs for peeing in public.
I don't think they'd arrest you for that. I guess, you know, public nudity maybe.
And they'll put
exposing
you in,
yourself.
And put you in
lewd misconduct.
They'll put you in handcuffs for that?
I don't know. Johnny is freaking out here because the entire series rests on the shoulders of Justice not being arrested. And then the cop ends up letting Justice go and they head to Orlando. So then we go to Orlando. Knobs is with the investors. The fans are waiting to come in, but the talent haven't shown up, and the investors are upset. They're like, "This isn't good. This isn't good." Oh, this was just so cheesy. They finally show up just in time to start the show. Hogan mails in a taped promo giving them a pep talk. And then we got all our matches. They first, the women Trixie and Starla were pulled from the show. They were going to do a boxing match, but Hogan said no boxing on the show. The girls were crying that they had been yanked from the show 2 days into their career. And then they were put into the Battle Royal. Everyone was happy. Did a bunch of matches, finished with the Battle Royal, and the winner would become the MCW champion. And the final two in the ring were Blix and Demo. So what a story here. And then the finish came as Demo hit his somersault off the top as 2001 A Space Odyssey played in the background. He hits it, pins Blix, and then they do the respect angle at the end of the match, and they hug each other in the ring. These two hated enemies putting their beef aside for the good of the MCW Heavyweight Championship.
This was your WrestleMania moment. A year's build in 1 hour.
And then Blix cut a heartfelt promo backstage saying that, I respect Demo, but he's still a whiny bitch, and the next time I'll shove that belt up his ass.
Yeah, that's it. That's the show.
No, it's not. Because then Hogan comes backstage, and everyone's at the edge of their seats.
At that moment when I saw Johnny walking towards the promoters, as a businessman, I was pretty worried.
So what'd you guys think, man? Are you in or you're out?
Okay, we got a crew. Guess who was in the back, Jack, the whole time? And I didn't want to put the pressure on you guys and girls. You guys did a really, really great job. But the investors thought you guys were awesome. They thought you were unbelievable, man. So the money's there for a real wrestling tour and a chance, if you guys really have it in your blood, to be a real wrestling company.
This show continues.
Yeah, well, that's the premise that sets up the rest of the season. And the credits roll. And
Bischoff and Jason Hervey take responsibility for this.
Yeah.
What a show. What a show.
You know, I have to say, if these guys, the midgets were good, pretty decent performers, and they're good actors. I mean, I don't want to say good actors, but I mean, for pro wrestling, the midgets are pretty good performers.
Yeah, that guy, the guy Blix was a good talker.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a show, though, that gets you...
Don't want to watch episode two.
No, it's not a show that gets you emotionally invested in any of the characters, and it's not a show that gets you emotionally invested like a traditional pro wrestling show might. This show is really it's a freak show. It really is.
Their goal, I think, is to shoot 13 episodes and hopefully sell it internationally and make their money on the back end.
Oh, yeah. And it's...
I can't see this company touring anywhere to do live event business or anything like that.
It's a very typical, like, fictionalized reality show, but I think the format's entertaining if you're not looking for anything, you know, more than simply you know, the chance to turn your brain off for an hour. I think it's, you could do that because the pace is so fast. It really is like TV for people with like ADD, the show.
I almost think with the right personality, they could be really entertaining in the Hulk Hogan role, but the fact that this is Hulk Hogan, it was just sad to see this guy. Like, this is where he's at right now, where he's this ridiculous figurehead on midget championship wrestling, micro championship wrestling.
Right.
It's just like this goofy premise with Hulk Hogan. Like, imagine Hulk Hogan is doing this now.
He's getting paid for it.
Good for him. That's great. So that was the show. I gave it a 2 out of 10.
I give it a 4 out of 10 because it went by so quick.
It was still 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. I thought Ring of Honor was more fast-paced than this. Let's get into the feedback.
Okay.
What a downer that was. Let's start off with Tom Henson. Hi, guys. Really enjoyed the ROH debut. Living in the UK, it's much harder to follow ROH. However, I think they did a great job of introducing the brand and providing a jumping-on point for new fans. The introduction of Nigel McGuinness was a surprise, and I'm confident over the next couple of weeks we'll see him grow as a commentator.
Robert Deal, good evening. This is the first ROH show I've watched in 3 to 4 years, and if what I witnessed is anything to go by, I will continue finding illegal ways of downloading each week since the show isn't available to watch on TV in the UK. They did a good job on introducing new fans to the company, what the Code of Honor means, and the Heavyweight Championship. For the first time in a long time, I was hugely impressed with tag team wrestling. It didn't have all these monkey spots, which I had become accustomed to in the past. This was solid, technical, hard-hitting wrestling. The main event gets two thumbs up. Also, was it just me or did Kevin Kelly look like he was going to explode with excitement when he was on the mic? Great job on the podcast. Kept me entertained on my long flight from London via Dubai to Beijing. Looking forward to more awful pay-per-views reviewed, which turned out to be some of the best reviewed.
Ryan Daniels, can't offer feedback on MCW, but will comment on the ROH Sinclair debut episode. Overall, it was a good episode. As an international viewer, having seen a small handful of ROH DVD events in the middle of last year, I had an idea of what to expect, but still largely feel new to the promotion. The idea of getting Future Shock and the Bravados' brief thoughts on their upcoming match was a good idea and helped to give a small insight into them, as I've never seen any of them. I did think it seemed odd that Kelly mentioned Kyle O'Reilly being part of Davey Richards' training camp, but then teaming with Adam Cole, who seemingly isn't part of the camp as well, and not one of the other camp trainees. Thought the explanation of the Code of Honor was pretty simple to understand, and Jay Lethal did a good job of talking up the importance of being in ROH and the television championship. I liked seeing the recap of the Best in the World show, but was thinking, why were they showing that and not clips of their most recent iPay-per-view, unless it is understood that the weekly show will be a little behind the current ROH developments due to several episodes being recorded weeks ago by the time they air. And finally, by having the only two bouts being tag matches and one of which being the tag team championships, it seemed to give the titles and the division a sense of importance. So those few minor questions aside, while the show won't dissuade me from watching and enjoying all WWE's weekly shows and pay-per-views, it was a good first episode that was different and seemed more like traditional pro wrestling in approach, so it has my interest piqued. Mm-hmm. Some good thoughts there from Ryan.
Manhattan Mob. Couldn't Hulk find someone else to be the evil frat boy in MCW? I mean, it's hard to believe it's a reality-based show when confronted with an ROH former world champion as the head of the frat that books MCW, then tries to stiff them. Brother.
Manhattan Mob. Chris Charlton, all the way from Japan.
Oh.
This is the guy that, met W.H. Park. They became friends through this podcast. Watched ROH on YouTube, which is naughty, yeah, and entitled Generation and all that, but when you get a double standard of having to pay a subscription to watch online, it seems like you're being punished for being an outer region. I'd happily sit through 10 minutes of ads to watch on their website, but not pay for what is free TV to some. Still, it was a decent show. The in-ring stuff was obviously good and slickly produced, but the vignettes in between seemed forced and a bit QVC-ish. Mm-hmm. Didn't really like McGinnis as a color guy either. So, well, there you go. In terms of if you want to get it on the Monday, I guess you do have to pay.
Yeah. Then Zenzigo says, you don't have to pay to watch the show online. It will be free on their website on Thursdays. I'm waiting until then to watch as I want to support them via sitting through some ads.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the Monday deal you were talking about, I guess, is what you have to pay for. And then you can wait. Henry Thompson II, who has written a short novel for us. This is my first true exposure to ROH outside of Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine and catching matches here and there on the web. This show lived up to the hype, and ROH is definitely what I've been looking for in pro wrestling. While I didn't get to see them on HDNet, I'm glad that they've landed on their feet with Sinclair and that wrestling fans now have an easily accessible third option to WWE and TNA. Cornette, Kevin Kelly, and the rest of the crew did a great job with the episode, as it was truly a soft reset for the company, while new viewers and fans weren't treated like idiots for not knowing the ins and outs of the company. They still presented ROH as a company that's been around for years. Also, am I the only one who noticed that Bryan Danielson and Christopher Daniels both made appearances on this episode? Going with two tag team matches for the first episode was a smart move. Claudio and Chris Hero look good, and I'm kicking myself for not making a point to watch any more of their other work before now. Haas and Benjamin looked, in my opinion, a lot better here than they did in their WWE days. They seem more relaxed, comfortable, and intense. The Bravados Cole and O'Reilly match reminded me a lot of the old school WCW Cruiserweight matches, but the only difference is that the guys actually sold the moves. Going with the tag team matches for episode 1 was a smart move because it truly did show viewers that ROH is different from your mama's pro wrestling of times past. McGinnis and Kelly were great on commentary, and what I loved about them is that they were focused on selling the talent in the ROH brand rather than their characters. You could actually hear the excitement in their voices as they called each move.
Stefan Kyle Go Sign. As someone who has never watched ROH before, I thought overall this show was well done. We had two solid matches, a retrospective on two important elements of the promotion, and an overall strong show. My single gripe is that we saw the same highlights for the Best in the World tag team match twice, nearly back to back. Aside from some of the camera work, wide shots looked pretty hazy, but the angled shots closer to the action were much cleaner. This was an excellent show. ROH, you have earned a fan this day.
Let's move over to Brendan Caulfield. I thought I'd watched the premiere episode of MCW. I thought it was a half hour. My expectations were low. It was double that length, and my attitude was completely flat on the product. On the other hand, I saw ROH's debut, and never a big ROH fan before, I was pleasantly surprised of how much I got into the packages and matches. Unlike MCW, I enjoyed the full hour. Thanks for the laughs and enjoyment. Keep up the good work.
The Godfather, Nate Milton.
Brother Pollock. Review and Impact.
Yes. Brother Pollock and Brother Ting. I had the good fortune to be able to watch both of these shows this week, and I was pleasantly surprised in both cases. ROH's new show has tons of potential, and we got to see a glimpse of it this weekend. To me, the show had a mid-90s ECW feel to it, and that's something the business has been lacking ever since that company went under. I enjoyed the main event, and I really liked Kevin Kelly and McGuinness on commentary. My only complaint was that we didn't get a singles match on the show. I'm a fan of tag team wrestling, but I think ROH would have been better served to pick a young singles worker and give him a showcase match on their debut show. That being said, I enjoyed the program, and I give it a 7 out of 10. This week, I also had a chance to see the first two episodes of Micro Championship Wrestling, and I gotta say, I loved it! Hulk Hogan may be a negative influence on TNA, but he's in his element on a reality show like this. I really enjoyed his old Celebrity Championship Wrestling show, and MCW is almost as entertaining. The first episode is kind of average, except for Blix showing us that he's the Shawn Michaels of the midget world, but the second episode really kicks the drama high into high gear. I give episode 1 a 6 out of 10.
So impact level.
On a side note, I know I'm late, but I'd have to rank your reviews of the 89 Great American Bash, Super Clash 3, and the Women of Wrestling Unleashed show as my favorite podcasts. The only episode that I didn't really like was the Always Sunny in Philadelphia show, but even that show was better than most of the wrestling podcasts. Keep up the good work, and congratulations on 2 years. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Nate. And we'll end off with Steve Kassan. Hey, John and Wei, first, may I suggest a title if there is a weekly ROH review? RAH, Review and Honor. Anyways, I really enjoyed the debut episode. However, I think the Godfather said it best when it reminded him of an ECW feel. I got that same feeling as well. Let's just say you were a wrestling fan in the 90s that watched WWF, WCW, and ECW. ECW was the renegade promotion that was grittier, more urban, edgy, and a real alternative to the high-gloss productions of the other two. It is about the content than high production value. Same thing with ROH, and I think it's fantastic. It is a true alternative option. If you have another show which is basically the same thing as Raw, Impact, and SmackDown, then what is the point? Being different is how you stand out. Going back to those fans who watched in the 90s and fell off, the debut show can be a hearkening back to that time. A reminder of ECW and the alternative it brought. It's not cheesy and it does not look like a corporate product. The moment I saw Kelly stand in the middle of the ring with that wide shot and the crowd chanting ROH, ECW immediately popped in. I'm sure I'm not the only one. It's funny when you think about it. You can relate the individuals, players, etc. from back in 96 to now. Triple H, Nash, Hogan, Bischoff, Vince, Kevin Kelly, Cornette, Russo, Lawler, King, and a plethora of guys who were involved back then are in it now. I find that very interesting and I hope history does not repeat itself. So that's all our feedback for this week, everyone. Thanks for those that checked out Ring of Honor as well as Micro Championship Wrestling. Seemed to be more checking out the former than the latter, but we always appreciate your feedback, which you can leave at reviewaway.com. We have new shows almost every day. You can tune into the site and catch something brand new during the week.
And subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yes, we are on Stitcher, Stitcher.com, and you can follow us on Twitter as well, at Law Radio, at Way0937. And looking ahead to next week, Way, what should we do review-wise?
It's your call.
Is it my week?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you chose it. Well, you know what? There's an event I was thinking about this past week, and I know some people are not crazy when we review older shows of this promotion, but I think it's an important one, and that is the 2006 Bound for Glory show, because if you recall, this was the first pay-per-view that Vince Russo booked for TNA, and it was also the first pay-per-view appearance for Kurt Angle.
Wow.
Who had just debuted with the company.
Perfect.
And this event took place in Detroit. And I thought it'd be fun to go look back at TNA right as the Russo era began for this company.
Sorry, what's the match? What's Angle's match on that?
He's the special referee for the main event, I believe.
Okay, cool.
So we'll check that out. Let's review TNA, as they do have their biggest show of the year coming up in just a couple of weeks. So we can take a look at Bound for Glory.
Wonderful.
Perfect. All right, so let's end it off here, Wei. We need a song to go out.
Well, I would like to go out to a song by... this one.
Oh! you know what? I actually like this tune.
You do?
I do. All right. That's all for us, everyone. We'll be back on Friday with Review and Impact with our special guest, Nate Milton, now part of the Review and Impact family. So tune back Friday and have a great rest of the week. Don't know. Seems you can't be sure of anything anymore, although you may be lonely, and then one day you're smiling again. Every time I turn around, I see the girl who turns my world around, standing. In my wildest dream, in my wildest dreams, I've never seen anything like this. With some give and take, with some give and take, the moves we make.